All right, we'll say good morning. Let's begin. Today's daf is Ayin Ches 78. We are picking up on Ayin Zayin Amud Beis 77b, right by the two dots, three lines before the lines get wide on the bottom. Reb Shimon Amiel Omer Melamdin Osan Shelo Yachzuru. Ketzad Kosev Lo Ani Ploni Ben Ploni. So remember, again, we were discussing the interesting idea yesterday that if I buy a field from Reuven for $1,000 and I go ahead and I give him $200, that the halacha is that $200 ultimately, again, is not kone the land for me. Instead, that $200 is the beginning of payment, but technically speaking, should either of us choose to renege, we can. Just we saw in the Brisa yesterday that whoever reneges, yodo al hatachtono, ultimately has the lower hand. Reb Shimon Gamliel says, there is an easy way to prevent someone from backing out of a real estate transaction once money has been tendered. And how is that? That when I go ahead and I give Reuven the $200, that ultimately the way we structure the agreement is that $200 is the beginning of the payment, is the payment for the land, and the remaining $800 becomes a debt that I owe Reuven. And that debt is payable over whatever amount of time, however long, however many years. But Lamais, again, the transaction itself is signed and sealed. So that's what Reb Shimon Gamliel suggests to avoid any type of potential retraction. Says the Gemara, time at the cost of Lahachi. So the only reason why such a transaction works is because it's committed to writing, because it's written down that I am purchasing the field from Reuven. This $200 is the payment for the land, and the remaining $800 is a debt that I owe Reuven, payable whatever the terms of the debt are. So the reason this works is because what's committed to writing. So it would imply that if one did not write down this arrangement, then in fact we would not assume this to be the case. But we learned, if I give my friend collateral, and I say to him, if I renege on this agreement, then my collateral should be acquired to you. V'alo Omer, and the other party says, "Im ani chozer bi ech polacha ervonech." If I go ahead and I renege on the agreement, I hereby agree to pay you double the amount of your collateral. So what's talacha? Niskaimu hatenoim. So we'll say again, these agreed upon conditions are upheld. To Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yossi the Tamei, do Amar asmach tekanya. So we'll say fine. So remember again a little bit of a blast from the past over here. Rabbi Yossi says that such an agreement is binding. Why? Because asmach tekanya. Because in general, according to Rabbi Yossi, exaggerated promises that we think people sometimes don't have the intention to fulfill are still binding. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Huda says, Dayo sheyikne keneged ervuno. Rabbi Huda on the other hand says, no, really a person should only acquire, meaning the amount of liability should be capped at the value of the iravon, the value of the collateral itself. When is that true? Bizman sha'amar lo ervuni yikon. That's only true where a person said, I'll say, look at Rashi over here, the amar le ervuni yikon, yikne hakol. That's only true where a person said, let my collateral acquire everything. V'hai lo ozil gabe limkor lo kolakarka b'kach. And the idea over here is that a person is giving this collateral to kind of go ahead and solidify the transaction without having given all of the money. Avam machar lo sada be'elev zuz. But I'm both saying a case where I sold Reuven a field for 1,000 zuz. V'nosam lo mehem chamesh meos. Reuven gave me 500 zuz. Kana. Reuven acquires the field, we'll say, with that down payment of 500 zuz. And then the rest of the remaining 500 is a debt that Reuven owes me that is payable over whatever number of years. In other words, the rest of it is a debt that that Reuven and I have to work out. So the Gemara says, so what do you see from here, Bosai? You see from here that even without a written agreement, we assume that when a person goes ahead, so let's say there are two things we assume. Number one, it seems to be that we're assuming most people don't pay full price. I should say differently. Most people don't pay the full amount for real estate at the time of the transaction. The assumption is most people give some amount of money and then will owe the rest as a debt. That's assumption number one. And assumption number two is that when I give, or when Reuven gives, when I give that half payment for the real estate, the transaction is then finalized right then and there with the tendering of that money. And the rest of the money is a debt, even if it's not committed to writing. So I will say, so that's the contradiction, because Rav Shimon Gamliel seemed to say this arrangement is only binding when it's committed to writing. Yet over here you see Rabbi Huda saying that Lamaise it works even without writing. To which the Gemara says, Lokasha, Hot us. So this is very interesting. Hadika ayal v'nafek azuzin, Hot delo ayal v'nafek azuzin. I will say, here's the difference. So let's say the following. I'm going ahead and I'm purchasing the field from Reuven. The field is $1,000. $1,000. I go ahead and pay him $500. The remaining five, now what's the status of the remaining $500? So now what do we say? Do we say that the transaction is solidified? Transaction is solidified and just the rest is viewed as a debt, but the real estate transaction has been solidified or not? Tushti Gemara says, it depends. It depends how Reuven is treating the remaining 500. If Reuven is constantly chaperoning me for the remaining 500, then what? Then it's clear that in Reuven's eyes, the transaction is not solidified until when? Until he receives all of the money. If, however, again, Reuven is not constantly chaperoning me about the last 500, but again, we'll work out the terms for repayment, then it's clear that he has allowed the transaction to be solidified with the down payment of the first 500. Look at Rashi. This is actually quite amazing. Hada ayal v'nafek azuzei, hadik tani dilo zakfali b'milveh, chozer. So we'll say, when do we say that lamaisa, unless, of course, this arrangement was committed to writing, that either party could still renege? In other words, that the transaction is not solidified and finalized until all of the money is given. Where the mocher, the seller, is constantly running after the purchaser, to give him his money. In a case like that, in a case like that, it becomes clear that the seller is essentially saying, listen, the only reason I sold property was, you have to understand something. So the Gemara, if from a Talmudic perspective, people didn't really sell real estate. You really only sold real estate for one simple reason, which was you need money, right? You were in financial distress. So therefore, again, in this case over here, if Reuven sold me the money, Reuven sold me the field for 1,000 zuz, I paid him 500. If he's constantly running after me for the remaining 500, that indicates to me that he sold his land because of financial distress. And what happened? And Reuven's intent was that this transaction is not finalized until I give him the full amount. But if I don't go ahead and give him the full amount, the transaction is not finalized. On the other hand, if I pay him the 500, he says, okay, let's work out the terms for payments for the remaining 500, but he's not constantly chaperoning me, then what? Then that indicates that he is giving me over a title of the land with the first 500, and the remaining 500 becomes a debt. And I will say, this is true even without a shtar. To which the Gemara says, fine. Damarava, Haiman de Zabin Midi Lechavre, that if a person sells something to his friend, the Ka'ayo Venafek Azuze, and both say the friend gave partial payment, and then the seller is constantly running after the purchaser for the remaining money, lo kani, then ultimately again that shows that the seller does not want to convey title to the item until after all of the money is given. However, lo ka'ayo v'nafek azuze kani. But if lamaisa, the seller went ahead and sold the object, the purchaser gave partial payment, and the seller is not running after him for the rest of the payment, that indicates that what? That the seller is willing to solidify the transaction with the partial money that was paid, and the rest of it will become a debt owed from purchaser to seller. To which the Gemara says, va'amara v'hayman da'osim e'azuzu v'chavrei. Supposed to say another interesting idea. Rava says, if I borrow 100 zuz from Reuven, upari zuze zuza, and I will say, what do? I pay Reuven back one zuz at a time. Meaning, let's say for argument's sake, the debt is due in 100 days from now. So I have a great idea. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go ahead, I pay him one zuz a day. Okay, so what's the halacha? I will say, piron havi, again, certainly it's a valid form of repayment, but Ela the islay tarumes gabe, but Reuven can be braygis with me. Reuven can be upset with me. Why? The amarle af sedtinhu minoy. Because Reuven can say you caused me to lose debt. So we'll say, what does this mean? You know what this means is if somebody borrows something significant from you, let's say somebody borrows $1,000, and for argument's sake, the debt is due in 3 years, and they pay you back, okay, we'll call it, 75 cents a day. So what's going to happen? What's never really going to happen? No one's putting 75 cents, away. So what's going to happen? You're going to have it in your pocket. You're going to go ahead and you're going to buy a cup of coffee or whatever you could buy today for 75 cents, And what's going to end up happening? At the end of 3 years, technically speaking, the debt is paid, but what? But what? You don't really have the money. As opposed to, if it would have just given you $1,000, so I could have taken, I could have put it in savings, I could have done this, I could have done that. So the money is pointing out, okay, Rav is just saying it's totally legal. Meaning, again, this is assuming there was no stipulation otherwise. It's totally legal to repay a debt like this, but just understand the lender is not going to be very happy with you. Ahu gavra, v'zavin lechamer lechavre. So we'll say there was an individual who sold the chamor, who sold a donkey. And sometimes chamra means wine, sometimes it means donkey. So Baruch Hashem Rashi over here says chamor. So there was an individual who sold a donkey to his friend. Upash le chad zuza. Well, so listen to this. So if you can imagine this scenario, I bought a donkey from Reuven for $1,000. For 1,000 zuz. For 100 zuz. And what happened? I paid him 99 zuz. So I owed him one zuz. V'ka'ayl v'nothek azuza. And what happened? Reuven is always running after me. Do you have the zuz? Do you have the zuz? Can you pay me the zuz? So what's the halacha? So we'll say, so remember again, this is following on the heels of the previous discussion. So remember, we just established before that what? That when you're buying something and you pay funds, but not the full price, if the seller is constantly running after you for the remainder of the money, that indicates that what? He is not willing to convey ownership or title of that object until you are fully paid up. If on the other hand, he says, okay, you owe me the money, let's arrange it as a debt, but it's not pressuring the purchaser to pay, that indicates that he's willing to convey title even with the partial payment. Let's say I bought a donkey, 100 zuz, and I paid everything but one zuz. But the purchaser is constantly the seller is hacking me for the one zuz. So what is the status of this sale? Yosir Ravashi, the Kama'ainba, Ravashi looked into this and he said, Ki agavna mai. What do we say in this case? Kani, olo kani. So do we say, Rabosa, at the end of the day, listen, I paid 99, I'm one zuz, I'm going to pay the zuz. But Lamai said 99 zuz of the 100 zuz purchase price have been paid. The deal is done, I just owe him a zuz. Or do we say, no, since the seller is constantly hacking me for the zuz, that indicates that what? He's not willing to convey ownership of the object until after I am fully paid. To which the Gemara says, Amar le Rav Mordechai Rav Ashi hachi Amar avim mehagronyo mishmei derava zuza kizuzi dami velo kani. So we'll say, so Rav said, it doesn't make a difference if you owe the seller one zuz or 100 zuz. If the seller's running after you, actively pursuing you for the rest of the money, that indicates that what? He is not willing to go ahead and convey ownership of the object until after you are fully paid up. The Gemara says, Amar le Rav Acha Rei Rav Yosef Rav Ashi Varmin Mishnei de Rava Kani. Aye, but we learned elsewhere in the name of Rava that he would be corner of the object. Amalei, Tetargim Shmaitecha Bimocher Sadehu Mipnei Ra'asa Ayin Ches Rabosai. So see Rabosai, there are different cases. There are different reasons why a seller would pursue a buyer to finish up the deal. So Rabosai, up until now, we were assuming that Lamaisa, if Reuven sold me an object and I gave him partial payment and he is constantly running after me, pursuing me for the rest of the payment, we assumed that the reason that would be happening is why? Because his intention is not to convey ownership of the object until after full payment is made. There's another possibility as well, which is if Reuven is selling me, let's say, a field or something else, let's go with the field right now, that is not a good quality field. He's not trying to dupe me, meaning it's clear. It's clear at the end of the day that Lemaisa, again, that it's not the best kind of field. Or, for that matter, Rashi says over here, Mipnei Ra'asa, Da'aran Sadi Dibalav Onsa Dezuzi, Nami Havamaz Bin Lei, V'hai Da'al V'naf Kazuzi Memar Hu Lig Bo Shal Yachsul Okeach. Reuven's telling me something about, say, that's not like the greatest object. And what is he concerned about? He's concerned that I'm going to renege. So therefore, why is he pursuing me? Not necessarily to hack me for the money, but ultimately just to be done with the transaction. Be done with the transaction. So Lemaisa, again, says the Gemara, it's therefore that accounts for the two statements of Rava. If it's clear that the seller is running after the buyer, that the seller is running after the buyer because he wants the money, then Eina Chinami, the purchase is not concluded until after the buyer pays the entire amount. If, however, the seller is running after the purchaser to get the rest of the money in order that lamaisa what, that the buyer does not renege because it's an object of compromised quality, the transaction in that case is finalized even before the buyer has gone ahead and paid all of the money. Fine. So it says the Gemara Pshita, also listen to this case. So it's clear, if let's say again, the seller wanted to sell land for 100 zuz, v'lo ashkach, but also he was unable to go ahead and find a buyer for his 100 zuz property, and therefore v'zavan v'masayim, we'll say he had to sell his 200 zuz property. Look at Rashi in just a moment. What happens? Reuven needs to sell his field, right? Reuven needs cash. So he needs 100 zuz. He wanted to sell 100 zuz field, and that was it. There were no buyers for small fields at this time. So what did he do? He went ahead and he had to sell a 200 zuz field, a larger field. So what happens? And about say he's running after the purchaser to give him the entire amount of the money, lo kani. So we'll say in that case, it's clear that the purchaser does not acquire the land until after he is fully paid up. We'll say, what's the logic behind this? Because lemaisa, again, since it's clear to us under these circumstances that Reuven is selling his property because he needs money, therefore, again, it's clear to us as well that his intention would be not to transfer title of the field until the field is fully paid for. But also, what if you have the following situation? Reuven wanted to sell a field for 100 zuz, but he wasn't able to find a buyer. However, but had he tried a bit harder, right, had he pushed himself a bit more, he would have potentially found the buyer. Velo tarach, but instead he chooses not to push himself too much. V'zabin b'masayim. So instead he goes ahead and he just sells a field for 200 zuz. V'ka'ayo v'nofik azuze. And we'll say he runs after the purchaser for the rest of the purchase price. Mai. What is the halacha? We'll say, is that like a person ultimately, again, who's selling a field of compromised quality, who runs after the purchaser in order to go ahead and seal the deal, olo or not? To which the Gemara says, teku. We're not sure, we'll say, what to do in that kind of case. Now, obviously, in any of these situations, wherever you'd have a teku situation, you would rule the chumrah. Says the Gemara, sachra, sachamra, vesakedar, sochra, lein, omata. So, remember again, last case in the Mishnah. Last case in the Mishnah was, I hired someone for a time-sensitive job. So remember the case in the Mishnah? I hired flautists, right? Flautists to play the flute, either at a levaya, or ultimately, again, at a chasana. And what happens? They were unable to go ahead. They canceled. So what's the halacha? So we'll say, I can go ahead and either hire other people to go ahead and do the job, or omatan, or I could deceive the service providers, the flautists who canceled. And we'll say, how do I deceive them? Seemingly by offering them more money in an effort to entice them ultimately to do the job they were hired for. But at the end of the day, I don't have to deliver on that money. To which the Gemara says, So the Mishnah says two possibilities. Possibility number one is I can hire other workers. And remember again, I pass those costs ultimately onto who? Onto the workers or the service providers who canceled. Remember again, this, by the way, we'll have to find the time to come back to this at some point, maybe over one of the legal holidays. You know, this major machlokas we have between Abitos and Rabbanon about when workers walk out on a job and additional costs are incurred, who bears the brunt of those additional costs? Is it the workers, like Rabbi Dosa? Because again, we say Yad Balabais Al HaElyona, or ultimately is the Balabas, like the Rabbanon, who holds Yad Polim Al HaElyona? So we'll say that is a very important discussion. Now the Mishnah clearly seems to pass like Rabbi Dosa, namely that if the flautists go ahead and cancel on me, I can go ahead and hire different flautists and pass that cost onto the guys who canceled on me. So the shayla is up to how much cost, meaning ad kama, meaning, so let's, all right, say so I'm an emergency. Now, again, flautists are hard to come by, especially, again, last minute. So they're going to extort me, right? They're going to go ahead and they're going to charge as much money. So how much cost can I actually pass on to the polim that canceled? To which the Gemara says, Amar Nachman, ad kedei scharam. So what's Rav Nachman says,
the workers who canceled, their liability is capped at their wages. Rashi says over here, "Ad kedei scharan im aso etzlo ktsas hamalacha v'lo kiblu klum socher alein kolmashu chayev lahem yosef lachem v'gmir." So we'll say, interesting enough, Rav Nachman says that a canceled worker's liability, or I should say, a worker who cancels on me last minute, his liability is capped at the amount of money he earned. So I'll say, so just to give you a simple example with this, let's say for the flautists, right? For the flautists, I gave a 50% down payment. Right? I committed to 50%. Suppose I said the halacha is that I can go ahead and essentially charge them for what, up to the amount of money that they earned in this capacity. The truth is, this illustration works better not with the flautists. It works much better with the workers in the field. So we'll say, for argument's sake, let's go back to what we learned before. I hired the workers to harvest my fields for 400 zuz. They harvested half of the field. I owe them now 200 zuz. So the halacha is, I could spend up to an addition. Now, again, I already have allocated 200 zuz to finish off the rest of the field. I could charge them up to 200 zuz to hire new labor to finish off the field. In other words, that I can go ahead and pass as much cost up to them, up to the amount of money that I owe them. But they can never be obligated to dig deeper into their pockets in order to make me whole for my loss. That's Rav Nachman, Eser of Rav Nachman. But Rabbi said, Rav Nachman, one second, Adar Boim v'chamishim zuz, but yet we learned before Rabbi Osai, that you can go ahead and pass up to 40 or 50 zuz, more than, right, you could pass up to 40 or 50 zuz of expenses onto the workers who canceled. Amarlei ki tanya hahi sheba'asa chavili yado. So we'll say, Enoch Navi, now remember, 40 or 50 zuz is a lot of money, so I can go ahead, so the Gemara says, I can even charge them more, to which the Gemara says, well, it depends. We'll say, it's actually quite amazing as well. Sheba'asa chavili yado means that if I have some of the craftsman's tools, in other words, if the worker canceled on me and he left some of his tools, I will say I could sell off his tools in order to go ahead and pay for the rest of my labor to finish off the field or to finish off the job, whatever it may be. Look at Rashi. Shebasa chavil liyado im yesh biyado mishalohen harbe kederach omna hamakabon alei malacha mevim klei omnos lebeis balabai. So I will say, if I hired workers to go out and do a job, often they're not bringing their stuff with them back and forth every single day. They're often leaving it at my home. If I have their tools and they canceled on me and I need to hire new workers and it's going to cost me a lot of money, I could sell their stuff in an effort to go ahead and pay for the additional labor. So what comes out over here, and again, with this we conclude this section, but what comes out over here is that it's clear that when the workers cancel on me, and Lamaisa, what I have to hire new workers, and there are additional costs. You will say, if it's just going to cost me the same amount that I budgeted, okay, I didn't really lose anything. If it's going to cost me more, I have the ability to pass that cost on to the workers who canceled. How much cost I can pass on to them, or what is considered to be the amount of cost that they're obligated to absorb. So it appears that they cannot be forced to absorb any more loss that corresponds to the amount of money they earned for the part of the job they did. The one exception to that may be that if they left behind certain tools at the work site, I have the ability to sell off some of those tools, or maybe all of those tools, depending on the circumstances, we'll see, to pay for the rest of the labor. Good. Says the Mishnah. We'll say, I rent a donkey, and when I rented it, I was clear with my intentions. I said to the owner of the donkey that I'm renting your donkey for it to carry a load on the mountain. All right, that was it. I have to transport a load from point A to point B, and I'm going out and taking the donkey on a mountain. Valichu babika. But instead of using it on a mountain, I used it in a valley. Babika, or reverse case, I rented the donkey to go ahead and use it in the valley. Valichu bahar. And instead I went ahead and I took it on the mountain. So we'll say, swat tahalacha. And now, again, the case over here, vafilu zu eser milin v'zu eser milin. And let's say, for argument's sake, the distance is the same. Meaning both are a journey of 10 mil. Right? Meaning there's no difference in the journey. What's the halacha? Umeis, and the donkey dies. Chayiv. But in that case, I'm chayiv. And again, why am I chayiv? It would appear that I'm chayiv because I deviated from the terms of the schirus. I rented the animal for a particular purpose. I deviated from the terms of the rental agreement. And therefore, once the animal died, ultimately I'm chayiv. Now we'll discuss why that is. Let's listen to this. Now, I rent a donkey to take it on the mountain. You know, leholicha literally means to go out and lead it. Because the way, remember, the way you normally utilize a donkey is you would load up a donkey with a load, and you would lead the donkey. So I went ahead and I rented a donkey to lead it on the mountain. But instead, I led it on the valley. Im hechlika potter. I will say, if the donkey slipped and died, ultimately, again, I am potter. Now, why is that? Look at Rashi. Im hechlika potter. Remember, again, let's be clear on what the case is. I rented the donkey to use it on the mountain, and instead I used it in the valley, and it slipped and it died. I am potter. Rashi says, Im hechlika potter. Shebahari yiru'ya lahachlik yoser, shiroshar chadu mishupal etzadim. Because it was a slippage, is a much greater risk on mountains than it is in valleys. So the Gemara makes an interesting assumption. If the animal slipped and died in a valley, it would have what? Would have certainly slipped and died on a mountain. And therefore, again, I am not chayiv for liability for that. Now, both say, okay, I'm not chayiv. We'll see what all of this means. However, it says the Gemara, Mimhochma, but if the animal overheated, and died, then chayav. Because it will say why. The assumption is that a valley is hotter than a mountain. But if I rented the donkey to go ahead and lead it in the valley, but instead I took it on the mountain, im hechlika chayiv. If it slipped and died, I'm going to be chayiv. Because we're both saying, again, remember, there's much less of a chance of slippage in the valley than there is on the mountain. Therefore, if it slipped and died, I am responsible for the slippage. Vim hochma, but if it overheated, putter. Because we also remember, again, if it overheated on the mountain, it certainly would have what? It certainly would have overheated in the valley as well. Im machmas hama'ala, but we're both saying, if ultimately, again, I rented it to use it in the valley, but instead I used it on the mountain, and it died, machmas hama'ala, it died as a result of the altitude, then what? I'm going to be chayiv. Hasochras achamer v'evrika. If I rented a donkey, now Rashi says over here, well, we'll see what it means. Hevrika, I'll just tell you, because the Gemara is going to say, it means it became blind. Animal became blind. O shenasis angaria. Or Rabbi said, look at Rashi, it's the first white line in Rashi. He says, O shenasis angaria, shenatlu la'avodas hamelach. The animal was taken by the king to use for the king. So it's meaning the king was sometimes just take animals for his usage, for the kingdom's usage. So the animal was taken by the king. Omer lo, harei shalchal lefanecha. The owner has the right to say, listen, this is your problem. I mean, it's not my problem. The animal became blind. The animal was conscripted by the king. You're still responsible for the rental payments. And it's your mazel. Look at Rashi. Harei shalchal lefanecha, second wide line. Telena kamo shehi smuya v'telech shaf mazalcha garen kamo mazali. So the owner of the animal said, listen, you know what? Yeah, I know you have a blind animal, but you know what? You could still lead a blind animal. The donkey could still transport stuff. And it's your mazel. You know, what am I going to do? I mean, look at, the owner said, it's my mazel also. Because remember, when the schirus is over, when the rental is over, the owner now also has a blind animal. He says, look, we're both at a compromise, but this is the animal you rented. This is the animal you have. So the Gemara says, fine. So the Mishnah says the following. But if the animal died, or the animal, literally nishpara means it was broken, let's say the animal broke a leg, and it was no longer able to be used. Both says it's actually interesting halacha, that remember again, if something happens to the animal during the duration of the rental, and it was appear from the Mishnah, we're talking about a case where the damage is not the fault of the renter, so the owner is obligated to furnish a new rental animal to the renter in order for him to finish out the duration of the rental agreement. Take a look at Rashi. Chayiv, hamask yolim kara ar. So we'll say in this kind of case, where let's say again, the rental animal died, or it was no longer usable. So in this case, the masker, the renter, owner. The owner of the animal is obligated to sell the hide, the nevela, the klavim, ulahosif mos, lahamilo chamor, o yiskar lo achar b'dime nevela, shari chamor ze, shibidlo, o yachsu lo scharas. So we'll say in that kind of case where I rented the animal to another individual, I'm the owner. If something happens to the animal that renders it unfit for the duration of the rental agreement, I, the owner, am obligated to either furnish a new animal, either actually find him another rental, or go ahead and sell off the carcass of the animal that died and somehow use those funds to procure a new animal in order to be able to give it to the renter for the duration of the rental. Says the Gemara Mishnah Reisha, the little Kamafli, the Gemara Mishnah Seva, the Kamafli. So we'll say, the Gemara asks a very simple question. If you notice again, the Mishnah has two parts. In the first case of the Mishnah said that if somebody rents a donkey to leave it on a mountain and instead let it in a valley or vice versa, and the animal died, so the renter is going to be chayiv for deviating from the terms of the rental agreement. Yet, interestingly enough, and the Gemara makes no distinction, yet in the second case, second part of the Mishnah discusses that what? If I rent the animal to use it in, let's say, the mountain, and instead I use it in the valley, and the animal slips, right? So we make distinctions between the different cases as to how the animal dies. So why is it that in the second part of the Mishnah, we make distinctions between how the animal died versus the first case parts of the Mishnah, there's no distinction that's made? To which the Gemara says, Amri debei Rabbanai Reisha Shemesa Machmas Avir. Because the case of the Reisha is where the animal died because of the difference in air quality. Now, what does that mean? Daminan Avira Dahar Katla, Vaminan Avira Debika Katla. So let's listen to this. So the Rabbi Yana says like this. We'll say in the first case of the Mishnah is I rented an animal to take it in the valley. And instead I took it on the mountain and it died. Now we'll say it died. It didn't die because it slipped and fell. It didn't die because, you know, whatever, it jumped off the mountain. It just died. So the Mishnah is teaching me that we attribute that sudden, unexpected death of the animal to the altitude. Similarly, right to the altitude, similarly, if I rented the animal to use it on the mountain, and instead I used it in the valley, and the animal just died, I attribute that death to what? To the overheating of the animal. So I assume that whenever the animal dies, and there was a change in the agreement of, there was a change in the rental agreement, or the circumstances of the rental, I attribute that sudden death to the change in circumstance. That's the Gemara's teaching me, or Mishnah's teaching me. And Rabbi Yosef says, what's the case? The case where ultimately the animal died of fatigue. So Rashi says over here, uftsina, ayefus viyegia. The animal died of fatigue. Mimasa, holicha bahar yachalomar ayefus amayla, sha'alsa lo shahar, hoil la, metrila alkin aifala la achrasman, kishacha badarach hichlaka, viyagata achrasmaso amesa, vimshinila lolicha bibika, avabishla rainu osamazas. So I'll say, because again, if I was supposed to use it in a mountain, on a valley, and instead of using it in the mountain, so the animal died of fatigue by climbing the mountain. And if the animal was supposed to use it on a mountain, and instead it was used in the valley, I could say it died of fatigue from the overheating. Okay, same idea. Rabbi says, Kigon Shekisha Nachash. What's this interesting? Rabbi says, the case over here is where the animal was bitten by a snake and died. So we'll say, so what's the chap with this? The chap with this is like this. I rented an animal to use it on the mountain, and instead I used it on the valley. It was bitten by a snake and it died. So we'll say, so what's the halacha? I'm chayiv. Why? Why? Because had I not brought the animal to the valley, it wouldn't have been bitten by the snake. In other words, Lemaisa, the reason why this happened is because I had the animal in the wrong location. Had I had the animal in the location where it was supposed to be, the snake wouldn't have been there, and this wouldn't have happened. Therefore, I'm responsible, ultimately, again, for the death of the animal. Next, so the Gemara says, Rabbi Chiya bar Abba Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Haman, Rabbi Meir, Dharma Kalam, Ma'avir al-das shal balabayis, Nikra abadeis, Nikra gazlam. So we'll say, the Mishnah reflects the view of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir holds that any time you deviate from the instructions given by the Balabayas, you are called a thief. You are called a thief. Look at Rashi, Nikra Gazlan, the Kamalei Birshuse L'Eschai B'chol Omsin B'Sifat Rabban. So let's remember, again, we learned this concept before, that any time you have an object in your Rishus, and you go ahead and you deviate from the terms of that agreement, effectively, you become a gazlan, you become a thief, and once you become a thief has heightened liability, right? A thief has liability for anything and everything. So therefore, in this kind of case where I agree to take the animal on the mountain, and instead I take it from the valley, take it to the valley, I am deviating from the terms of the rental agreement, and therefore what? I'm a thief. Once I'm a thief, I'm chai for everything. I'm chai for everything. So even if the animal drops dead, and I will say it has nothing to do with overheating, altitude, snakes, whatever else, I'm chai. Because once you're a gazlan, you assume complete responsibility for anything that happens to the animal. So the Gemara says, hey Rabbi Meir, which Rabbi Meir are you talking about? Ilema Rabbi Meir Ditzava. If you want to say it's Rabbi Meir, so we had this before. If you want to say it's Rabbi Meir, ultimately of the dying of wool, we learn this. Disnan Hanosein Samar Litzava. We'll say, if I give wool to the dyer to dye, Litzva la Adam Litzava Shachar. I gave it to him to dye it red, and he dyed it black. Tzor Shachar Litzva Adam. Or I gave it to him to dye it black, he dyed it red. Rabbi Meir Omer no sin lo demet samro. Rabbi Meir says, "Rabbi, say what's the halacha? The halacha is you have to repay the value of the wool." So Rabbi say, "Now what's the chab over here? I have to meaning I give the wool to Reuven. I tell him dye it red. He dyes it black." Rabbi Meir says, "Reuven has to give me the value of unprocessed wool. Why? Because the moment he deviated from my instructions, what happened, Rabbi say? What happened?
He acquired the wool, which means don't talk to me about red wool, black wool. You gave him my instructions. You acquired the wool. You owe me back what I gave you. That's Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Im Hashemach Yisrael Yitzia, No Sinas Yitzia. Rabbi Yehuda says, well, no, here's the issue of Rabbi Yosei. At the end of the day, I have an appreciated asset. Because dyed wool is worth more than undyed wool. Now, Lamai said, it's not the wool that I wanted. So therefore, the way it works is the following. I have to pay Reuven the dyer, right, the lower of two amounts, either the expenses or the appreciation. If the appreciation is more than the expenses, no, so let's say it's, I give Reuven the expenses. But if the expenses are more than the appreciation, then no, so let's say shevach. Then I go ahead and I give him the appreciation. So both say, Sigmar suggesting, it's this Rabbi Meir, because Rabbi Meir is on record over here saying what? That since Reuven deviated from the terms of the agency, he is a gazlon, he acquired the wool, and he has to give me back the value of unprocessed wool. To which Sigmar says, Nimai, I don't understand how you know it's this case. Maybe it's this Rabbi Meir. Dilma, shiny hasam, dekanya bishinoi maisa. Oh. We'll say this case is different. Why is this case different? Because it's a shinoi maisa. We'll say, what does that mean? In this case over here, Reuven is doing something to change the object. So we'll say, not everybody, but it's a much more agreeable stance that if you did something to fundamentally change the object, that you would acquire the object with that shinoi. But remember, in our case, the Mishnah will say what? There is no shinoi maisa. I haven't changed the animal in any way. So who is to say that therefore our Mishnah is the sheet of Rabbi Meir? Eloha Rabbi Meir. Rather, it's the following sheet of Rabbi Meir. Well, so listen to this. It's actually a very interesting aloha. The Migbas Purim. It's Rabbi Meir of the Purim collection, right? It's Rabbi Meir of Mataros Levionim. Disanya, Magbas Purim, a Purim. Well, this is actually a halacha. Any monies collected for Purim have to be distributed for Purim. Look at Rashi. Magbas, a Magbas is a collection plate. So the Magbas Purim, look at Rashi. Moshe Govin Hagabayim, Mnei Ha'ir, Lechalik La'anim, Lezudas Purim, the Purim. Kulam Yitnuha La'anim, the Purim. We'll say, you know, this is actually interesting halacha. In general, Hilchos Tzedakah, if you do a push for a particular tzedakah, let's say again, you're trying to raise money for X, and you raise the money, and there are surplus funds. The halacha generally is the surplus funds can be allocated for other charitable needs. So I'm raising money for Achnasas Kala. Turns out the chasana was going to be $10,000. I raised $15,000. That other $5,000 could be allocated towards other tzedakah needs. Okay, you can't put it in your pocket, but you could go ahead and use it for other tzedakah needs. The one exception to that rule is Purim. Any monies collected for Purim need to be distributed for aniyim for Purim. So magvas at your osa, so the osa, Purim money collected for the residents of a particular city have to be distributed in that city. Ve'in medaktikin bedavar. But we're not so medactic with this. Rashi says, what does this mean? They're medactic medavar. Lomar dayim bepachos, amosa yipolakistos tayus. People say, under normal circumstances, it's important, again, a lot to talk about this. Person has to be very careful with tzedakah funds. Meaning we don't just distribute tzedakah wantonly. Meaning if I know that the ani could go ahead and accomplish what he needs to accomplish with less money, so I don't just give him all the money I have for tzedakah. The one exception to this rule where we're not so medactic with aniyim is Purim. It's Purim, in other words, which we give to the aniyim. We'll say it's just like, again, you know, it's important to halacha in general. You know, if a person comes along collecting for something, you have every right to look at the letter if you want. I don't think you need to look at the letter. Just give them the money. But okay, but if you want to look at the letter, you can look at the letter. But let's say on Purim, you can't, you know, on Purim, somebody puts out their hand and they ask, they say they need, the halacha is you have to give. You're not supposed to vet causes on Purim or individuals. So the Gemara says, rather, mostly what we do is we go ahead and we purchase animals, we shech them, we give to the aniyim to go ahead and eat, to take care of whatever they need, and any leftover monies, or I should say any leftover animals, Rashi points out, any leftovers ultimately fall into the tzedakah fund. Fine. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Magvas Purim LePurim. Rabbi Eliezer says, any Purim collection has to be distributed on Purim. Ve'ein ha'ani rashe likach man ritzu l'sandalo. And I will say, if Lamaisan Ani receives Purim money, he can't even use that money to go ahead and purchase a shoelace for himself. In other words, any monies received for Purim have to be used on Purim. Ela, Unless, of course, again, he asked permission for this, or this was stipulated with in the presence of the residents of the city. In other words, what this is saying is the following. Purim collection money, Purim stucco money, has to be used for Purim, unless, of course, the townspeople who are contributing it give it with the intention that any additional funds can be used for other tzedakah items as well. Dear Rabbi Yaakov, Sha'amar Mishon Rabbi Meir. So we'll say these words are Rabbi Yaakov, who said in the name of Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Shimon Liyah is Mekel, and ultimately says that no one could even use surplus funds for other tzedakah needs. So we'll say, the assumption over here is that what? That Lamaiser, see Rabbi Meir holds something very interesting, that if the townspeople gave Purim money, then what? The ani is not permitted to use that matanos savyonim for any other tzedakah need, even for a shulis, without the permission of the townspeople. And Abba say, if he does, then what? Then that is the equivalent of theft. So what do you see from Rabbi Meir is saying? That lemaisa, again, you cannot deviate from the intentions of the balabos. So I will say, this would be the Rabbi Meir over here also. That's what Rabbi Meir says, that what? That if I go ahead and rent an animal to use in the valley, and instead I use it on the mountaintop, I'm called the gazlon, because I'm deviating ultimately from the instructions of the owner. To which the Gemara says, Dilma hasanami, da'adaiti de purimu de yoyevle, a'adaiti de mi de'achrina lo yoyevle. So I'll say, I don't understand. Rabbi Meir could also be saying this just by Purim. I will say, this is just a din by tzedakah. Now again, I will take the exception to this. If I went ahead and I told someone I'm collecting money for a specific cause, and they give it to me, I cannot then unilaterally decide to use that for something else, because lamais, again, they gave me the money with that intention. So maybe what Rabbi Meir is saying is the following, that at the end of the day, when the people in the town give money for Purim, they're dafka giving it for that express purpose. Therefore, to use it for anything else, by definition, requires their permission. But you cannot necessarily extrapolate that this is Rabbi Meir Shita in all other situations as well. Elaha, Rabbi Meir. So we'll say, remember again, just to keep our eye on the ball over here. We have Rabbi Meir on record as saying that Lamaisa, the reason why in the first case of the Mishnah, if I rent the animal to use it in the valley, and instead I use it on the mountain, that I'm going to be chayiv for that is because Rabbi Meir holds that anytime you deviate from the instructions of the Balabas, I am a gazla, I'm a thief, and therefore I have full liability. We're just trying to figure out which shita Rabbi Meir we're making reference to. Elohar Rabbi Meir. Rather, I must be the following Rabbi Meir. This sign, Rabbi Shimon, Allah's Omer, Mishnah Rabbi Meir, Hano Sein Dino Lo Anu Likoch Lo Chaluk Lo Yigeh Botalis. If I go ahead and I give a dinar to a poor person to purchase a shirt, I give a dafka for the purposes of purchasing a shirt, he should not use it to purchase a cloak. Or talis lo yigoch b'chalok. Or if I give him a dinar to go ahead and purchase a talis, a cloak, he shouldn't go ahead and use it to purchase a shirt. Why? Because the boss said the ani is violating the intentions of the balabas. So what do you see from here? That whatever. So v'dilma shani hasam the asul mikshadei. But maybe there's a different concern over here. That maybe they will come to suspect the balabas. What does that mean? The amri inchi amar planya zabnina lelevusha leploni anya. For those Zabinle, Bose, listen to this, because people will suspect the donor. The donor said, I'm going to buy a shirt, the Ani Nebuch, the Ani needs a shirt, I'm going to buy him a shirt. And when what happens, when people say the Ani doesn't have a shirt, so they're going to assume what? That the donor didn't honor his pledge. He did. It's just that the Ani went ahead and used the money for a cloak instead of a shirt, that people will come to be choshesh that the donor is not a man of his words. Idnami, Zabnina le glima, for those Zabinle. So we'll say if that's the case, then why doesn't the Braisa say the Ani can't switch the money to use it for something else because he'll cause the donor to become suspect? What does it mean that because he's going in violation of the desires of the Balabais? So this in fact is Rabbi Meir. Do you see from here Rabbi Meir holds anyone who deviates from the agreed upon circumstances as stipulated with the Balabas is called a gazlan. So we'll say, so this is the shita of Rabbi Meir, that when you make an agreement with someone and you violate the terms of that agreement, you are called a gazlan, you are called a thief. Now we'll say, again, it's never good to be called a thief, but in the case of the Mishnah, what that means is once you are called a thief, you assume full responsibility for the object. So if I rent a donkey to be used ultimately again in the valley, and instead I use it on the mountain,
I am deviating from the terms of the agreement. I am called a gazlan. Once I'm called a gazlan, I have complete liability for the object. Therefore, if that animal drops dead on that mountaintop, I have absolute and complete liability for the animal. Good. Well, no, you're called a gazlan no matter what. But the ramifications of being a gazlan only come out if something happens to the animal. Correct. I was saying, meaning, the moment that I deviate, I am a gazlan. But the only, so that which is not good, which is not good, but the ramifications of that are only felt if something happens to the animal. I'm sorry?
Do you
Do you have to pay kefal? No, kefal is a din on a ganov, not a gazlan. Somebody only steals secretly, not publicly. This way, and this would be a case, ultimately, again, is he's actively deviating from the instructions. There's not no kefal in this case. Says the Gemara, it's high for principle, no kefal. Says the Gemara, Oshinasis angaria. Oh no, I skipped. Ahasochar sachamar vivrika. If one goes ahead and rents an animal, an animal goes blind. My vivrika. So what does it mean the animal goes blind? Hachar targima no risa. So here they say it refers. No, Risa Rashi says is hayosis b'shachar ayin, has some type of speck in its eye, which ultimately compromises the vision of the animal. Rava Amar avzakas. So Rava says it's avzakas. As avzakas, Rashi says hatalam et li ragla. It has worms in its leg, which weakens the bones. Hahu da amar luhu avzakas b'milsa. Excuse me. Hahu da amar luhu avzakas. The milsa de malka amrule b'mai batli kasef or batli dafs. Okay, so also, let's go back. Gemara tells a story. Hahu do amrulehu avzakas b'milsa de malka. There was a guy who said that there's avzakas b'milsa. Look at Rashi. Ra'isi ash ochlim sha'ochel shiraim sha'otzar melech. There was a guy who apparently said I saw moths in the king's clothing. Right, that means hahu do amrulehu avzakas. So the Gemara is just using it. The reason why it's a little bit confusing is avzakas, we just said, it either means speck in the eye or it means some type of worms in the foot. Apparently, it could also mean moths. So someone went ahead and said, I saw moths in the king's clothing. Amar lei b'mai. So they said to this guy, knew, in what type of clothing of the king did you go in and see the moths? So the Gemara says, betale kasef or betale dav. Did you see it in the silver clothing or did you see it in the gold clothing? Ika da amri betale kasef amar. So some say the guy answered, I saw it in the silver clothing. Vikatlua, and they killed him. Ika da amri betale dav amar b'shavkua. Others say he saw it in the gold clothing and the leather. What's happening over here? Look at Rashi. Rashi says betale kasef doesn't literally mean silver clothing, rather clay pishtan. It means flax or linen clothing. So betale dav, gold clothing, means wool. So we'll say, so apparently, again, according to the version that says that he saw it in the flax or the linen clothing, moths don't attack flax or linen. Therefore, again, Lamaisa, he was lying, and they killed him, according to the one, but according to the version that he said he saw in the gold clothing, which means the wool clothing, moths do attack wool, and therefore they let him go. Oshinasa sangaria ore omer harisha chalafanecha. Or I will say, if the animal was conscripted by the king, so the owner of the animal says, it's your problem, it's not my problem. Well, say this is only true with what we call angaria choseres. Angaria choseres, look at Rashi for just a moment. This is actually the next Rashi. Angaria choseres is like this, we'll say, that it would be common for the king to go ahead and take an animal from someone, use it. But he would only use it until he ran into the next animal. In other words, and then what he would do is the king would keep on repeating this process until his needs were serviced. So meaning, if the king seized my animal, pretty much I knew it was just a temporary seizure, and at some point in time, I'll get back my animal. So Rav says the only time the owner of the animal has the right to say to me, Rishal Chalaf Amecho, is in this case of Angaria Choseres. So I'm going to get back the animal relatively shortly. But Angaria She'enu Choseres, Chayiv Lahamid Lo Chamor. But I will say, in a case of an Angaria She'enu Choseres, so the king took the animal, and I'm not getting it back. Look what Rashi says. This would be the equivalent, ultimately, again, of the animal that died, or its leg broke and it was unable to be used. Shmuel says, and ultimately, again, Shmuel says, whether it is a returning angari or not a returning angari, ultimately, again, if the animal was seized in its normal derech halicha, Rashi says over here, in b'derech halicha nitla, shangaria molichas la derech shahaya zeh rotzeh lalich, we'll say, if the king sees my animal, but the king is going in the same direction I am going, then what? Harishal chalaf anecha. Then the owner can say to me, listen, you know what? The animal is going in the same direction. You'll get it back at some point. I'm shalom al Yisrael.
Ve'im lav bederach halichasa nitlaf chayav lahamilo chamar.
But if the king takes it, and what? And the king takes it in a dramatically different direction, then what? Then the owner is obligated to give me a new animal. So we'll stop over here for today. So just understand now, remember, as much as the Mishnah said that if the animal is seized by Angaria Shalmelech, the owner has the right to say, Hare shachal lefaneach, that's your problem. Again, machlokis Rav and Shmuel, how to qualify that. And we'll get to resolution on this Yugi Meretz Hashem tomorrow.